Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome to Through the Smoke on Radio at Firehouse.com. We're back. This is your host, Billy Goldfeder. Been offline for a while as far as doing this show between some positive family events like a grandchild and work and other stuff. We just have not had time to catch the show back up. But at the insistent begging of Firehouse.com and tons of money thrown my way, we've decided to go ahead and relaunch this show. Wink, wink. Just kidding. Seriously, it is a pleasure to be back. And I guess I was taken back by the amount of interest that many of our listeners had in the show by their speaking to Firehouse.com about it and where's the show been. And also quite amazed at all the downloads that continue to occur on the archive 40 or so shows that we did in the past. So it's a pleasure to be back. We're going to try and keep this at least to once a month, if not more frequently, so we can pass on stuff that we have to pass on to you like we've been doing for years. Today's show is going to be real interesting. We're going to be speaking with some folks from the Insurance Services Office, ISO. You've heard about them in sometimes a positive light, sometimes a negative light. And I think in many cases, the negative light is perception and things that we just don't know about. We think this, but when we find out about something that we're not sure of, we sometimes find out we were wrong. And in a lot of cases, the understanding of how ISO works is misperceived and misunderstood by the fire service and those who write about the fire service. So we're going to have a chance today to talk to the people in charge who can share with us what ISO is, what ISO is not, and where ISO is going in the future. Certainly, and very tragically, when the 9 firefighters were killed in Charleston, the fact that the Charleston Fire Department was rated an ISO Class 1 raised a lot of eyebrows. A lot of people brought that up. Well, if they were that good, then why were all these things found to be inaccurate, or rather to be wrong in how they operated their fire department? And we'll talk a little bit about that, but we're going to focus mostly globally on how ISO and your community and your fire department and your fire chief can interact for very, very positive results. I know personally when I started writing in both Firehouse.com and the other places that I write for in the last year or so, when budgets were getting very, very tight in many communities, I had suggested and others brought up the fact that, hey, you can have a community where they have to make budget cuts and they shut a fire station down. In most communities, the public is concerned. Some aren't, and I still don't get it, but that's the way it is. Some communities, they reduce your staffing from 4 people on a company maybe to 1 or 2 on a company. And again, in some communities, they're concerned about that, and there's a public outcry. In some communities, there's not. So when we take the emotion out of it, we have to realize as firefighters that, unfortunately, in most cases, the citizens are about dollars and cents. Clearly, publicly elected officials are about dollars and cents, and that's a big deal to them. I remember years ago I worked for a county as their fire chief, and the county administrator said to me, "Billy, don't bring up any dead babies at this budget meeting." What he meant by that was, don't raise the issue that if firefighters don't get there quickly and save lives, it's going to be a problem and all that. Well, I obviously, feel that way, that we do have to have well-staffed companies. We do have to have well-placed companies, and we have to arrive quickly and efficiently to do the job, get water on the fire, make the grabs, make the rescues, so we matter. But there's another aspect to this that a lot of communities forget about, and that's the dollars and cents end of it, specifically related to the insurance premium. Let's say you own Joe's Bakery, all right, and Joe's Bakery has a firehouse a mile away, and Joe finds out they're shutting the fire station down. He may be concerned about that. He may not. He's busy these days trying to sell bread and cookies. That's a big issue to Joe. His attitude probably, as a lot of citizens are, hey, you know what? If I call 911, the fire trucks will come. Besides, I won't have a fire. So that's kind of the typical attitude. However, when Joe, who's struggling to get by selling bread, gets his insurance premium, and there's a change on his insurance because the insurance industry has realized that Joe's Bakery is not as well protected in the past, then Joe starts to get it. And this is an angle I encourage all fire departments, all fire commissioners, all fire chiefs, all union presidents, associations, organizations. If you're involved politically, locally in your community with the fire service, and you're involved with setting budgets or managing budgets or convincing the budget makers that it's important to retain firefighters, it's important to keep people on the job, it's important to recruit more volunteers for your volunteer fire department, to make sure you keep stations where they're at, to not reduce anything, one angle is to consider the insurance impact on not just the business owners, but the homeowners in your community as well. I think that's a huge issue. There's been some very positive successes in just the year, in the last year or so, working with our guests who are going to be introduced in just a minute, related to the fact that, you know what, there is certainly the life safety aspect of this, and as firefighters, that's what we mostly care about. But we take the emotion out of it for a minute, and we talk dollars and cents. And when you talk to the community, when you talk to the business leaders, can you imagine? For example, if you're a city council member and you vote to reduce staffing, you vote to shut down a fire station, but then the public or they get educated on the fact that, well, you know what, you've saved money, but now you're costing your taxpayers and your business owners and your industry owners this much more money in insurance premiums. They're like, whoa, wait a minute. I thought we were going to save money. Actually, when you save money, it may cost you more money. Right down at the most basic level, the business owner, the homeowner, and the shop owners who pay those insurance premiums. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about this morning, is how ISO can assist fire departments, fire chiefs, and the community overall in having a win-win on all aspects of this. So my guest this morning, before we go any further, I just want to make mention and show our deepest respect to Fire Commissioner Mike Lombardo and the gang up at the Buffalo, New York Fire Department. By now, when this show is aired, and we're recording this show this week down in Dallas at Fire Rescue International. Today is Wednesday, August 26th. I believe we're airing this show next week, but by now we've already nationally shown our respects in the deep, deep loss of Buffalo Fire Department Lieutenant Chip McCarty. McCarthy and Buffalo firefighter John Kroom, who tragically and heroically lost their lives this week when they responded to a structural fire. There were clearly reports of people inside the building, dispatcher receiving multiple calls reporting people still inside. And when they arrived on the scene, they clearly determined the conditions were at that moment safe to go in and do a search, as they do, as we do, as you do. And unfortunately, the circumstances turned on, and both Chip and John lost their lives very heroically and very tragically. If you're not new to this show, I'm pretty vocal about the fact that, unfortunately, every year many firefighters lose their lives in the line of duty and didn't have to. Unfortunately, in this very tragic case here, it looks like that the Buffalo firefighters, Buffalo Fire Department, and specifically Chip and John, had no choice but to go in and do that search for those people that were reported to be trapped inside. So our deepest respects as in the loss of the Buffalo Fire Department members, both Chip and John. Back to the show. Well, our guests today are friends of ours, of mine. One name you're going to know, Butch Cobb. Butchie's been involved in the fire service for about 150 years. He's been around forever. And Butch is actually retired chief of operations for Jersey City, New Jersey. He is not unknown within the fire service. Perhaps you best know him for his work with Firehouse Magazine and the Firehouse shows. Butch also played a key leadership role in helping raise money for the Worcester Fire Department when they suffered a major, major loss years ago when the six firefighters were killed at the cold storage warehouse fire. Butch is currently the Director of Community Mitigation, and as I said, for ISO, and he's retired Chief of Operations for Jersey City. He's also former Volunteer Fire Chief of West Milford Township, New Jersey, and former Volunteer Fire Chief of Dumont, New Jersey as well. Butch, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Billy. Thanks for the kind words. I think it's slightly under 100 years I've been around, so I just want to correct that. Thanks for the invitation, and I want to thank Firehouse.com and Pete Matthews for setting this up and also reaching out to us. I think we have some important things to share with the fire service, and I'm looking forward to our discussion.
That's what we're going to be doing this morning, and I appreciate you being here, Butchie. And we also have a guest on our show, which is Butch's boss, Mike Waters, who is the Vice President of Risk Decision Services for the Insurance Services Office, which is what ISO stands for. And Mike is a captain in Jackson, New Jersey, Fire Station 55 there in Jackson, New Jersey. And, you know, first of all, let me introduce you, Mike. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Chief. It's a pleasure to be on, and we're very gratified that you've selected ISO as the subject that you'll come back in with to this through the SMOKE program. So it's an honor for us, and we're very pleased to be here.
It's great. I'm glad you're joining us today as well. You know, I as you guys both know, the listeners of the show may or may not know, but I worked for ISO for 5 years back in the 70s, and I was responsible as a part of a team to evaluate the fire departments of southern New York, Nassau, Suffolk, Westchester, Rockland, and Putnam counties. And I got one heck of an education. I still say to this day the best education in one shot that I ever got in the fire service was evaluating over 400 fire departments in that period of time. And that was under the old grading schedule. We're currently under what they call the new grading schedule. And you're getting ready to launch a new schedule very soon. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes. I know that there's a lot going on working that and putting it up. And to our listeners, what I want you to understand is that ISO is not a bunch of suits running around with pads of paper and calculating stuff. Although they do wear suits and they do calculate stuff, many of the ISO people I've worked with, and here are the two people who run the program nationwide, are firefighters. So we're not talking about people who do not understand the fire service. So even if your local ISO representative, when they come to evaluate the fire department, may not be a firefighter, he or she is getting direction from people who have decades of experience in the fire service, and in this case today, Mike Waters and Butch Cobb. And there's many, many others. There's Freddie Brower and just so many others who have years and years of experience that only benefits the local community. So let's just do a little bit of discussion and talk about the ISO. Now, there's a couple of little acronyms and initials we're going to use. First of all, ISO stands for Insurance Service Office. PPC, and I look at your website and I see the PPC program, and I'll leave it up to you guys who wants to answer each question, but what does PPC stand for?
PPC is our Public Protection Classification Program, and that's developed from application of the Fire Suppression Rating Schedule, or some people may know it as the FSRS, and that's really breaking it down is a standard methodology. It's the way in which we can gather information on how a community faces its local fire protection challenge, and that is the type and number and structures, the number of structures that are within the community boundaries, what is in the community to burn, and how well prepared is the community in terms of their fire communications, the water supply, and the fire department to handle those challenges. So we conduct this on a national basis. As the Chief pointed out, we do so on the basis of highly trained and deployed field staff around the country, and they engage directly the local community officials, starting with the highest municipal official, the fire chief, the water superintendent, the emergency communications director, gather the information, we put it through this methodology, and we ultimately determine a classification. Just the classification runs from 10 being unprotected or otherwise not meeting minimum criteria to 1, which generally represents the superior fire protection capabilities.
So you're not really just rating the fire department in the current manner of your inspections. You're evaluating specifically their evaluated ability to handle a structural fire strictly from an insurance law standpoint.
That's correct, and that's a very good way to describe it. Is it's the comprehensive capability of the community to face their fire protection challenge in its complex state, if you will, fire department, water supply, as well as emergency communications. And we might add that our role is advisory to the insurance industry. There's no requirement that insurers use this information. It's up to them to determine how to apply it. But we hear from many insurers that the program is utilized directly in their underwriting and rating criteria.
Okay, so and it looks like you're evaluating over 45,000 fire districts across the country. So that's a lot of fire districts that you're evaluating. And I guess, you know, in another nutshell, generally when you use the PPC program, the better fire protection, either based upon what you've discovered or what a fire department does to improve their service, leads to lower losses. So while there's a dollar value in here, it also leads to lower losses, which indirectly has a correlation. I know ISO currently is not focused on life safety, and that's not to be negative. It's just the way it is. We're talking about property insurance right now, and I will mention to our listeners, keep listening, because we're going to talk about where ISO's looks like they're going in the future, and it's going to take on a whole different look than we're used to. But it really does right now. The assumption and the calculation, and in most cases is accurate, that better fire protection as measured by the PPC program will lead to lower losses.
Absolutely, and that is really the attraction that insurers have to this, because fire is one of the leading causes of loss, despite the very dramatic and significant losses that occur with hurricanes and earthquakes and floods, which are all devastating in their own regard. Every community in the country is faced with fire losses every day. And through those losses, the insurance industry looks to the PPC program to help determine the capabilities of the fire department, the water supply, emergency communications, as it would relate to being able to affect lower loss. So you hit the nail on the head when you said that there is that direct relationship. A better PPC generally reflects lower property loss.
Well, and it provides an incentive for communities to improve the quality of their fire protection because, I mean, when they do that, then the entire community benefits economically. The fire department gets, in some cases, better funding, better staffing. So it's kind of a win-win in the end when people start looking at the dollars and the nickels that are involved in this kind of thing.
Absolutely, and we highly encourage community officials, fire chiefs, to contact us, and we can help by means of explaining all the details as to how that community can improve their level of fire protection and how it may lead to a better classification, which could lead to lower premiums. So that's something that we do every day with our full-time dedicated customer service staff. Dial the 800 number, 800-444-4554, and there's people at the other end of the phone who are there to help.
Well, and we also, if you look at the bottom of your screen, those you're listening to the show, I've got several links down there that you need to check out. There's a whole lot of great stuff on ISO. You can actually go out and contact ISO and get information for your pre-plans, and so many people don't know that. But I'm going to have all the links right down there. So when you're done listening to the show, go down, check out these links. Make sure your fire department, your fire chief are registered to become part of the – and we're going to let Chief Cobb talk about that in just a few minutes, about what the fire chiefs are being now offered by ISO as far as services. So basically we're talking about when a community improves its fire protection, everybody benefits. And that's kind of a lame statement, because we know that as firefighters, when a community improves its fire protection, everybody benefits. The problem is getting our elected officials and getting our city councils and our city managers and the community to understand that it's not money thrown away. It's not these guys sitting around playing checkers or these girls sitting around waxing fire trucks. There's a real value here that when you do have a fire, and you will in your community, there can be a significant improvement in the response of your fire department by using ISO in this manner. So let's go ahead. Go ahead, Butchie. Yep.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I just wanted to jump in for a second just to talk a little bit more on the link between the PPC program and fire losses. It's something that I learned early on when I came on board with ISO. I just got to tell a quick story. In 2004, ISO came into Jersey City, and my chief of department at the time, Rick Eggers, dropped into my lap. He said, ISO's coming in. And typical Northeast fire chief, I said, oh, gee, here's this inspection team coming in. I kind of went into panic mode a little bit. But you know what? They spent a couple months in Jersey City, and I learned a lot of the myths that are out there were you know, just that, they were missed. It was an incredible experience for me. But one of the things I learned, we were Class 3 when they came in, and we moved up closer to a Class 2, but we stayed a Class 3. But one of the important things for me back then was when they left, we were able to make the Dirty City Fire Department a lot safer than it was. We went back to things like testing hose, testing ladders, inspecting hydrants. We came up with a 5-year plan to make some changes to try to get to the covered Class 2. So for me, and from 2004 to 2009 when I joined ISO, that was always in the back of my mind that these guys, even though not much change in our classification, we just upgraded. We became a safer, better fire department. And you know me for a long time. Most of my classes and hands-on and training classes are based on surviving a fireground. And I honestly believe that they helped Jersey City firefighters survive the fireground by some of the things that we were able to do that really didn't cost much money either. That's a key thing. And we could talk about that later, some of the things that the fire chiefs can do to improve their PPC without spending much money. But the bottom line to the story was that because of my experience in 2004 with the staff of ISO, when they came knocking on my door and I threw my resume in for this position, I went there knowing that what they do actually matters. It really does. I was one of those naysayers way back when, but they changed my opinion. Now, just getting back to the link between the PPC program and fire losses, one of the things I learned very quickly as I came on board here, that absolutely positively statistical data on insurance losses positively demonstrated the relationship between having better fire protection, as we measure it in the PPC program, and lower fire losses. We did a study recently. One of our subsidiary companies, IXO Analytics, they did an analysis of 70,000 homeowner fire claims. 70,000 homeowners fire claims, and you know, without getting into the numbers, etc., what they found out, that just came out in the report, that better related protection classes demonstrate lower fire severity in three important categories: emergency communications, equipment and staffing, and water resources. And the bottom line to this very detailed study is two of the things that really stand out for me is communities with higher quality training have much lower fire claim severity, and communities with sufficient engine and ladder companies have lower fire severity in the community. So those two things really stick out for me when we looked at this study. And again, it's based on 70,000 claims from all over the country, from ocean to ocean. This wasn't just in one area of the country, northeast or south. This was across the country. They're the two things that stand out for me, spending 36 plus years in the fire service. And I know you believe this as much as I do, but higher quality training, the communities that had the higher quality training had a lower fire claim severity. And I think that speaks a lot. It's one of the things I learned very quickly.
Well, that's a huge issue, and I mean, we've been pounding it, whether it's guys like you and I and many others out there doing seminars and training at the various shows and stuff, or whether it's in our writings or our articles. It's all about training, and we can go back to nearly, not all, but nearly all line-of-duty deaths and find a training link that's missing. So I mean, we're going to get into the nastiest stuff. We're talking about the line-of-duty deaths. But in specifically related to ISO, which I'm going to talk to you a little bit about some of the changes coming to ISO, but currently with ISO, training also directly relates to the ability to put out a fire. We're not just talking about our own safety and survival, but if you've trained on interior operations, if you've trained on searching for extension, if you've trained on setting up a deck gun in an appropriate amount of time, if you've trained on size up, then you're going to be good at it when you get to the fire. The quicker we put the fire out, the quicker the gang goes home, and the quicker we have a loss stopped, the losses stopped, and then there's a direct relationship to the taxpayers. I mean, it's a whole connection. It makes a whole hell of a lot of sense. So let me do this, Butchie. Let me ask you a question here. What resources are available? And I'm going to have links on our show here for the gang listening to the show, but what resources are currently available from ISO to help municipal and fire department leadership analyze their community's risk?
Well, there's quite a few, and number one is our ISOmitigation.com. On that site, it's pretty much everything you need to know about ISO and our PPC program. There's customized reports for your community, and the information that we have there is specific to your community. It doesn't get shared with anybody else. You have to sign on. We check to make sure it's the right person from the community. You can then ask us for customized reports based on what we found in your community, and those reports can be used for benchmarking. It could give you a nice snapshot of your community. It helps to maintain and improve fire protection. And you know, the best thing about this is that this ISOmitigation.com and everything that we send to you is free. There's no charge. This is one of the things I really like about ISO. There are a lot of things that we give back to the fire service on ISOmitigation.com and the fire chiefs online, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. But all these things are free. And you know, one of the things that I want to do is get that word out there and have – I want every fire chief in the country to go to ISOmitigation.com and go to our fire chiefs online. So one of the resources is just going to ISOmitigation.com, looking at the things that we can send you. You can get your PPC report with all the details. There's another site.
Let me just jump in real quick, Butchie, that a lot of our listeners may not know, and I always have to be cognizant of that. What you folks may not realize is that while you're at the firehouse, while you're home, while you're at work, whatever you're doing right now, recently there have been people from ISO in your community, nothing to do with your fire department, but they've been out evaluating buildings specifically for the insurance companies that are insuring many of the buildings. So over time, in your community, ISO builds files, and odds are the great majority of every commercial and, I believe, multifamily dwelling in your community, ISO has records on. So just right now, your fire chief comes to you and says, all right, you're in charge of doing pre-plans. Holy crow, where do I start? Well, ISOmitigation.com, working with your fire chief, because he's got to give the password to get in there by registering with Fire Chiefs Online, and Butch will talk about that in a minute. You'll already have a baseline of the buildings that exist in your community. Maybe not everyone, and maybe some will be 3 or 4 years old, and so you need to update it. But an unbelievable resource that has nothing to do with them visiting your fire department. The ISO has people out there evaluating the buildings in your community for the insurance companies that insure those buildings. Butchie or Mike, a comment on that?
Yeah, you're very correct. In our database, we have over 3.5 million commercial buildings. We figure that might be a little over half of what there are in the country. Actually, we add to that list about 1,000 buildings a day, and we want to increase that amount as our program continues. That'll lead me to the other resource that fire chiefs need to link onto from ISO, and it's called Fire Chiefs Online. It's a special secured website with information and features that can help improve your ISO PPC. A fire chief can go sign on. We'll verify who you are. We'll give you a password. You pick your user ID. We give you a password. And then once you get onto Fire Chiefs Online, there are a lot of different things that you can do. The interactive maps. It'll bring up your fire district, your fire area. It'll show all the commercial buildings that are in our database in your community. It'll show on this interactive map. They're color-coded to needed fire flow. You can customize the map to pick out buildings, based on the fire flow, based on the size. So, and the best thing about it is that you can download each individual property report from these buildings. I can't think of a better way for a fire chief to start his pre-plan than by downloading the building information that we have on the website, and it's so detailed. You know, if a fire chief goes to this, he's going to be hooked. You can download each individual building. It gives you the needed fire flow, which you really can't even start a pre-plan until you have the needed fire flow. It gives you the details of what the roof is made out of, firewalls, if it's sprinkled, if it's not sprinkled. One of the things that we found as ISO came from Jersey City and I started to look at the property reports, there were buildings, warehouses that I knew were sprinkled, but on the report it said no sprinkler credit. And I asked about that, and it simply was that when we went to look at it, there was no paperwork. The system hadn't been tested, so we didn't know if it was reliable, so they don't get credit for it. Now, if I'm a fire chief, I want to know that.
Sure.
Is it that they didn't have it tested? Is it that it didn't work and they decided not to fix it? So that's a huge piece of safety information, if I'm a fire chief, that I want to know.
But here's an aspect in their community that falls under their authority as the fire chief they're not even aware about.
Right. They found over 400 buildings, commercial buildings in Jersey City, that had sprinklers, but were given no sprinkler credit. In some cases, they might not have been tested for years. So what happened is they gave us the information, gave it to the fire official. He reached out to all these buildings and explained to the owners. And in some cases, the owners didn't even realize it. So you know what happens? They're paying insurance rates based on no sprinkler protection, even though the building's sprinkled. So in a lot of cases, these owners had the buildings tested, got the proper paperwork, got the sprinkler credit, and the cost savings right there. I can't put a dollar figure on it, but the cost savings was almost automatic.
Yeah, it's substantial savings.
The bottom line, Billy, was that they gave it to our fire official, and we took credit for finding this.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. This is how the fire chiefs and fire unions, especially right now, are struggling, as well as volunteer departments as well, struggling to keep their organizations intact. And here's an opportunity, like you said, in Jersey City, if it weren't for the relationship between ISO and the fire department working together, this building owner would have continued paying 100% premium on what was perceived to be an unsprinkled building, non-sprinkled building, and because of the relationship between ISO and the fire department and the community and the owner, now that owner's probably paying about half, and I'll venture to say that's probably pretty accurate when you have a sprinkler building versus a non-sprinkler building. So that's amazing. Let me just touch on one more thing, Butchie. Then we're going to take a break, and then we'll get back to some questions related to the revision of the fire suppression rating schedule, things like that. But I want to comment, and then Mike or Butch, you can comment as well. Some of our listeners may not know what we're talking about when we say the needed fire flow. And real quickly, and there's a link right here on the website, through the smoke page you're looking at right now. Click there, and you can go and learn more about the needed fire flow. But very, very quickly, the needed fire flow looks at a building to determine the needed fire flow. You look at the size, the height of the building, and you look at the construction of the building, and there's a very simple calculation that's been around for years, and it works, that tells you if you've got a well-involved fire, what fire flow you need to put that fire out. So that's where the term needed fire flow comes from. Is that accurate, Mike and Butch?
Absolutely, and that's a very important description you gave, because that tells not only the fire department what kind of pumping requirements they're going to need to have to contain the fire in terms of equipment, but also the water supply, the water utility, how much water is going to be necessary in the street in order to put that fire out. So as you pointed out, if the community has required sprinklers or the building owner has on their own put sprinklers in, that's going to cut that needed fire flow down and in turn could lower their insurance premium. Well, either way, the fire department needs to be ready to supply that amount of water to that structure in the event of a fire.
Well, and I use that basis. I use that all the time in telling communities that's where you start determining the staffing you need for a first alarm, second alarm, third alarm. It starts with the needed fire flow. And right. That information, then you build up from there, how many lines you need, how many floors you need to search, and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, listen, you're listening to Through the Smoke at radio@firehouse.com. We're going to take a two-minute break. We'll be right back with our guests, Mike Waters and Butch Cobb from ISO. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. We'll be right back.
Radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
We're back. This is Through the Smoke at radio@firehouse.com. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. We're broadcasting live, quote-unquote, from Dallas, Texas. Yeehaw! From the International Association of Fire Chiefs, Fire Rescue International, show that's going on right now. And my guests this week are Mike Waters, Vice President of Risk Decision Services from ISO, and Butch Cobb, the Director of Community Mitigation. Both are seasoned veteran firefighters, probably about 60, 70 years combined service between the two of them. And we're talking about the Insurance Services Office, ISO, and the relationship between ISO and fire departments. Speaking of fire department, it's very difficult for us to all talk about, because either directly or indirectly, there's as a firefighter, the tragic loss of our nine brothers in Charleston at the Superstore fire. But ISO did come to light during that fire, and there was a lot of discussion when it was identified very clearly by looking at Charleston fire trucks and their uniforms that Charleston was an ISO Class 1 fire department. What our listeners need to appreciate, and it initially we all were kind of like, well, that doesn't make sense. What's the deal? Is ISO screwed up, or what's the problem? And it really had nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with the fact that ISO goes in and evaluates your stuff. Your stuff. And when I say your stuff, your engines, your ladders, where they're located, your communication center, your equipment, your water supply, your hydrants, the stuff. And then ISO evaluates your people, not from a performance standpoint, but what their jobs are, what they do, how many people are assigned to engines, how many are assigned to trucks, what your average responses are, how many people are involved. What ISO does not do is they do not rate your strategy and tactics. So it is almost in the theory that you've got some great stuff, but what you do with it has to be up to you to perform at the best level. All ISO can do is rate what you have and the people there who are expected to operate the stuff. As far as leading at a specific fire, whether it's the Charleston Superstore fire or a house fire tomorrow in California, that's up to the local department to perform at the level that they feel or whatever level they can perform at. So let me yield to Mike for a minute, Mike Waters, and maybe, Mike, you have a comment on that or want to share some thoughts on that?
Sure. As you have pointed out, the events that unfolded that day at the Super Sofa store were tragic, and we have expressed our condolences and have, as members of ISO and as firefighters, you know, certainly reach out to the families and survivors of the and members of the department. But as you indicated, the role that we have is to evaluate the capabilities and the resources, and we don't believe that fire chiefs want ISO to be telling them how to fight fires. As you said, we don't evaluate that strategy and tactics. So we work very closely with the city of Charleston. We were actually headed towards reevaluation prior to the actual fire event, and almost immediately thereafter, we received the complete most cooperation of everyone in the city of Charleston. And we actually, through that process, immediately reevaluated and brought that resurvey to its conclusion. So, as you point out, there is a role that we play, and that is the information that we provide on the basis of those capabilities.
Well, it's kind of like a football team. You can have a beautiful, beautiful stadium, the best facilities, the best training equipment, and loads of football players, but it still falls on the coaching staff to take the team in the direction they need to go.
Yes, and we also want to point out that we have been working closely with Chief Carr and his staff ever since, and We have spent a good deal of time in Charleston and in that information sharing process, and has been very, very productive for us and hopefully for the city of Charleston.
And moving forward very positively. Well, that's very good. And then the word from numerous venues from Charleston is that they are moving forward in a very positive direction, and their entire motivation is the fact that they lost 9 wonderful people and wonderful firefighters, and that is the impetus for change and moving forward. So that's a positive thing. I have a question for you, Butch. You know, there's been a lot of talk about ISO revising the fire suppression rating schedule, and I'm particularly excited about it. I've had the opportunity to meet with you and Mike and your staff at ISO, and you've attended some meetings with IAFC leadership, the safety and health section board of directors, the IFC board of directors, and you've really started to tease us almost with the upcoming changes, and I'm pretty excited about it. I think, in my personal opinion, that what you're looking at is the new fire suppression rating schedule is going to give much more of a real-world evaluation of what a fire department has and what they do. And I'm particularly excited because of my whole focus and most of my career is the survival of firefighters. And I know you certainly have spent your career doing that too, both you, Butch, and Mike, focusing as fire officers on your people. And it's neat to see that ISO is going to kind of be getting involved in that. So, Butch, let me give it to you for a couple minutes and tell us about the talk about ISO revising the fire suppression rating schedule into something that's something we haven't seen in the past.
Yeah, thanks, Billy. Good question. One of the first jobs, so to speak, that Mike assigned me to was to become part of the what we call the Draft Concepts FSRS 2009 Committee. And the committee's headed by Fred Brower. Now, Fred's one of our managers, but what everybody in the fire service needs to know is Fred was the chief of the College Park, Maryland Fire Department for 12 years. So Fred heads up the committee. We have senior field reps from all over the country. A lot of them have fire service background. What we embarked on was a project to review the entire FSRS and update the content of it where we thought applicable. You know what? It's been around for a while. There are still a lot of good parts to it that we left alone, but we saw a need to do a review and put some new things in there. You know, we know that things change in communities. We know that things change with communications. A lot of things have changed in the fire service over the last 10 years, and we wanted to bring this up to speed. One of the first things that we did, we decided to get together what we called our key stakeholders. For example, the NFPA. We went up to Massachusetts. We met with the NFPA, their staff. We actually had President Shannon in. We explained to them that one of the things that we want to do is have increased reference to the NFPA standards, and they were very happy about that.
So you're saying that basically in the past, ISO kind of had their own standards. You got to carry this on an engine. You got to carry this on a truck, as an example. So now, what we may be looking for in the future here is if there's an NFPA standard that says you need this much hose, this much ladders, this much tools, that ISO is simply going to refer to that as their standard.
Yeah, exactly. NFPA is the consensus standard. Most fire departments throughout the country try to follow their standards. And I'll give you an example really quick, and I think a lot of people in the fire service are going to applaud this. We've been getting a lot of positive feedback. One of the changes is we're going to go ahead and eliminate the current ISO equipment inventory. We had our own equipment inventory and said this should be on a ladder, this should be on a truck. You know what? We recognize that the NFPA standard, 1901 standard, has been out there. It gets upgraded every few years. So we're going to eliminate the ISO equipment inventory, and we're going to replace it with reference to the pumper and ladder service equipment listed in NFPA 1901. And I know that the common joke out there is the Cooper hose jacket.
Hose jacket, right.
You'll no longer – I actually assigned 2 firemen to go through the basements in Jersey City looking for that Cooper hose jacket so I could get my tenth of a point in ISO. But so there'll be no more searching for the hose jacket. So That's one of the changes. I'll just run through some of them pretty quickly.
Sure, please do. Yep.
Just kind of give you a quick overview. And the first one, like I said, we're going to eliminate our equipment inventory. Starting off with, we're going to increase references to the NFPA standards. And I'll give you some of them. We're going to put additional emphasis. In other words, fire departments will now be able to get credit for firefighter safety and training. Things like credentialing for fire officers in accordance with the National Incident Management System and recommendations from NFPA 1021. You can get credit for continuing education for officer training. We're going to look to give you credit for fire apparatus driver and operator in accordance with NFPA 1002 and 1451. We're going to reference and give credit to firefighter safety that supports property loss prevention. That's important to remember. Again, as you said at the beginning of the program, ISO is based on the suppression of a fire at a building. So we're going to give credit to firefighter safety, parts of which are in NFPA 1500, that support property loss prevention. We're going to give credit for, or we're going to have a requirement for personal protective clothing for all firefighters that are part of the suppression team. Now, a lot of chiefs laugh at me and say, well, geez, you know what fire department doesn't have PPE for every guy at a fire, every guy and gal at a fire? Well, you know what? One of the things I learned crisscross in the country here, you know, as a director of community mitigation across the country, there are fire departments that may have 20 members with 15 sets of gear.
Right.
Just doesn't make any sense. So we're going to give expanded recognition for automatic aid, which I think would be a good question when we get done here. I know a lot of fire chiefs ask me the difference between automatic aid and mutual aid, so we should get into that later. So we're going to give expanded recognition, additional credit if you're using automatic aid for first alarm structure fires. We're going to give an extension of credit for automatic aid response plans to first alarm structure fires, which means if you pre-plan with your automatic aid partners, and you have a communications plan and you have a common standard operating procedure amongst you and your neighbor, we're going to recognize that and give you some additional credit. There were so many upgrades in the fire department section. Just for those that might be interested, we have some new recognition in the water section. We've worked hand-in-hand with American Waterworks Association, AWWA. We're going to have expanded recognition for fire hydrants that have high flows. We're going to put more emphasis and give you more credit on water system inspection programs. Things like we want to get fire departments back inspecting hydrants, hydrant flow testing from your water department, valve testing, marking of hydrants. You know, if you're a progressive department and you mark a hydrant, depending on the flow, we'll look to give you some extra credit for that. And then there's a couple new sections. One is going to be with reference to community risk reduction programs. You know what? We know it's important to not have a fire. So if you have a community, and we'll give you recognition for adoption and enforcement of model building and fire prevention codes. You know what? Because the best fire is the one that doesn't happen. We're going to look to give you credit for recognition for public safety education programs if you're out there.
Let me just jump back a minute. So if a community has adopted a sprinkler ordinance versus a community that decides that they're going to ignore it and they're going to side with, a home builders association, for example, who aggressively fights sprinkler ordinances, the community that adopts a sprinkler ordinance will see direct value when they're evaluated as a part of the fire suppression rating schedule if this new schedule goes forward.
Yeah, that's correct. We're going to give recognition.
The show's over. I don't need to talk about anything else. We're done.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of simple, Billy, when you look at it. You know, if you have fire sprinklers, and we're going to recognize that in residential and dwelling properties because, you know, right off the bat, it reduces, you needed fire flow immediately. So, I mean, that's just, everything falls into place. When you have to sprinkle it, everything just falls into place, yeah. So
in many respects, and I remember I got in trouble when I worked at ISO when they introduced the new rating schedule, the one from years ago. The old rating schedule where we used to look at fire, water, fire prevention, and fire communications, and we pretty much eliminated fire prevention. I wrote a little editorial. This is in 1980, and I got dragged into Hobie Fountain's office, who was then the president of the New York area ISO, and got ripped for publicly speaking out about the new rating schedule. But you're now really, you're sort of going back a little bit, back to the old values, and the importance of evaluating things like the fire code, like fire prevention programs, and a fire department that has a community with a great fire department but does not have good fire codes and does not have a good fire prevention program and does not have a good PubEd program will suffer for that based upon the evaluation.
Yeah, we'll give you extra credit now. If you can show us, when our field reps come in, if you can show us that you have strong fire prevention codes, you enforce them, you're out there with your public safety education, we'll give you extra credit for that. So
there's a value.
All these things that I'm talking about that we're going to go out and look for, they have to be measurable. We have to be able to see that you're actually doing it. It's not just, you're just not going to tell us. We're going to look. You're going to have to show us your SOPs. You're going to just show us where you've been, what you've been doing. It's not a gimme. This has to be real. So we're kind of excited about that.
This is going back to the ISO that I knew and loved, where we would go in and truly spend time, develop this relationship with the fire department, and let them show us. I mean, I did one department in Long Island, I'll never forget this, and I asked to see the last 8 years of training records, and the ink was still wet on most of them. So, they were trying to BS me into, come on, it's not the same guy doing all the records for 20 years or 10 years. So you are going to go back and start, let's be honest with each other, type of an attitude between ISO and the community. But up front, ISO is providing all these opportunities, all these resources to improve your fire department, and even areas where in the past your fire department wasn't evaluated. I mean, I know I've spoken to fire chiefs. Why even do PubEd? Hell, even ISO doesn't pay attention to it anymore. Well, they are back paying attention to it, and they are back looking at some of this other stuff as well. This is exciting. This is good stuff, Butch. You go ahead if you've got a few more comments.
Yeah, just the last section is the name of the last section I want to talk about. It goes back to the days when you and I were probably firemen. It's called the fire alarm office, or the fire alarm section. One of the first things we're going to do is we're going to change the name of that. That section is now going to be called Emergency Communication Services, because that's what it is.
Great.
Back when they were striking boxes, and I actually go back to the days of the gong and register. But more than any other section, communications has evolved so quickly. The technology is just absolutely incredible. We recognize that. We've sat down with APCO. We've sat down with the National Association of Emergency Dispatchers, and really got brought up to speed. So, in the new section, we're going to look to give you credit for a recognition of enhanced 911, wireless, VoIP, the Voice Over Internet Protocol. We're investigating possibilities of giving you recognition for credentialing telecommunicators. In accordance with NFPA 1601, and there's a special project with APCO. It's called Project 33 that are looking into credentialing and having the telecommunicators be as qualified as any firefighter that's riding on a fire apparatus. So if you have all these things, we're going to give you credit for it, because the communication section is just really important. Because if you can't get the alarm out in time and can't get the fire trucks on the road, then we're all kind of behind the eight ball.
Exactly. It can be our strongest or weakest link if we don't have a good, solid communication system and getting the company.
So, I just gave you a kind of a quick taste of the three sections, the fire department section, water, and communication, of some of the changes. For any of the listeners that want a real clear view of what we're doing, they can go to isomitigation.com. They can click on the left-hand side. There's a little box that says special projects, and that'll give you an updated view of all the proposed changes. And we're really headed down a straightaway to the finish line. This has been going on for about a year or so. We're very excited that not too far down the road, we're going to get into the testing mode. We're going to take this out into the field. We're probably going to test the new FSRS in 400 or 500 fire departments. We're going to go into departments that we've done recently. We'll test the new FSRS. That's going to take a while, but it'll all be worth it in the end. And I think anybody that goes to the site and sees some of the things that, for me, some of the things that we're going to look to give fire departments credit for when it comes to firefighter safety. One of the NFPA standards that I love, and it's going to be in here for extra credit, is 1561. With the incident command system and rapid intervention crews, that's been rescue and trapped firefighters has been one of my themes for many sure. years. And I'm happy to say right now, 1561 is in there. If you can show us you have those 4 points, and you have SOPs and you're training on it, we'll give you some extra credit for that. And that's one of the standards that I'm really happy to say is in there right now.
Well, I want to let's talk about that, and this leads me to my next question. Thanks for that, Butch. I know that's a very brief overview, but those bullet points are important for fire chiefs and firefighters and other leadership in the fire service to understand which way ISO is going and how this is going to be a whole different tool to be used very positively. You're not saying this. I'm saying this. This is the stuff that saves firefighters' jobs. This is the stuff that saves money in the community while retaining those jobs. This is the stuff that further bolsters funding to volunteer fire departments and fire districts. This tool, this new fire suppression rating schedule, as well as the stuff that's available from ISO today, is a huge, huge deal and can make a big, big difference in some of the battles that many of you are having to fight right now. In my fire department, under the leadership of my boss, Chief Ott Huber, we're moving forward very aggressively with some area departments and doing some things together. We're looking at it's a consortium. It's a collaboration of several departments, and we're doing training together. We're doing purchasing together. And we're also responding through an automatic aid program, a very aggressive automatic aid program, where 4 or 5 years ago, on a first alarm assignment, I'd go in on a fire, and until we called for mutual aid, and that was only when we called for it, I'd have maybe 12, 13 firefighters, and that's not enough for a single-family dwelling fire by any means. When you calculate water supply pump operator, stretching three lines, venting the building, command, search, rescue, just not enough people. But we now have approaching almost 30 firefighters now on our first alarm, with anywhere between 3 and 5 chief officers filling in various command roles. And we're doing that through an automatic aid program because in many communities, you just can no longer afford to do it all by yourself. So, Mike, let me gear this question to you. Many fire departments rely on automatic aid for assistance, while other fire departments just call for help through mutual aid when they need it. How does ISO define automatic and mutual aid, and how can it affect the rating of a specific fire department?
Sure. We know that most fire chiefs, given the opportunity, would say, gee, I would like to have all of my resources under my control and my stations and my apparatus and my personnel and the like. But there may be some very good reasons for the fact that either due to proximity to other local responders, budgeting issues, or just the fact that there are specialized skills available to them that are located nearby, instead of having to be totally sufficient on their own basis, many communities say, look, I want to expand my perspective out beyond my own boundaries. So it's very important. We've all been in those situations as firefighters, as fire officers, where you're faced with a situation and I need more assistance, let's get them on the road. Well, there's a time factor. The time factor is from the time you decide I need them to their dispatch, to they turn out, to they run the call, to they arrive. Sometimes those are critical minutes that can affect both property loss and sometimes ultimately, unfortunately, casualties, whenever they may be. So when ISO, when we look at how the resources are dispatched, we make a distinction and a clear distinction between what is automatically dispatched through automatic mutual aid versus I need help, let's get them on the road and I'll call them when I need them and do that time interval. So when there is a demonstrated first alarm plan that is utilized on structured fire calls, then we can recognize that in accordance with what the needs are within that community. And just a couple criteria that are important, and we highly encourage fire chiefs to give us a call, and we'll talk about your specific situation. That's the best thing to be able to talk about. Just in general, we're talking about 24-hour day, 365-day structure fires, not just target hazards, not just part of the day, not just part of, you know, whatever, but there's an area in your district to give automatic aid plan. That automatic aid agreement is the most important thing, signed by both entities, and those are all good things to work out ahead of time anyway. You don't want to be deciding later about resource commitment or equipment, overtime, whatever. Work all that out ahead of time. And there's some very good templates around the country for those automatic aid agreements, so we highly encourage the departments to use those. And this can
Mike,
be...
Mike, let me ask you a question for clarification for the listeners. Automatic aid means town A, town B, town C, town D. Town A has a report of a dwelling fire. The dispatcher hits a button, and it activates town A and simultaneously either calls the other towns if they're not under one consolidated dispatch, or if they're under one consolidated dispatch, the dispatcher for town A also pushes the button for A, B, C, and D, hits send, and they're all alerted at the same time through a written protocol, through a written agreement. They've trained together, they've drilled together, and they're responding almost as one department. That's what you're talking about is automatic aid. Am I correct?
That is correct, and you'll get all that more points of credit for those aspects, that written agreement, that's the demonstrated track record of working together on that initial dispatch, training together, operating together on the fire ground.
Makes sense. Good. Back to you. Did you have a few more comments?
Only that this, and just to touch on the aspect of training together, there's additional benefit in that not only can you receive points of credit for automatic aid where you need it, but also when you train together, those are multi-company drills, and that's the time to work out all of your SOPs and how to handle certain situations on the fire ground ahead of time on the training ground, so that when you are on the fire ground, it's just a smooth operation and you're operating as really one department under one command. So that's the important part, is sharing resources, operating in a cost-effective manner, and that's something that we're hearing more and more about, actually, in that many communities faced with the necessity of budget reductions or just the fact that, hey, I've got all these resources within so many miles of my district. Let's all come together ahead of time. Let's sit down at the table when it's not the fire condition situation facing us, and let's work all these things out, and let's learn how we can depend on each other and share those resources. The benefit to that, on top of just fire ground performance and lower property loss and safer fire ground, is hopefully then some additional points on your ISO evaluation.
Automatic aid works so well in some areas. You can go into the D.C. area, you can go to the Phoenix area, you can go to the Columbus, Ohio, Cincinnati area. Those suburbs are running some phenomenal automatic aid programs. And I mean, in my area, you can actually go to a first due, and you two as firefighters appreciate this, you can actually respond to a first due fire in my district, and you'll get red and white trucks, blue and white trucks, green and white trucks, red trucks. Nobody cares. They're operating as
Absolutely.
One organization. The public, well, people say, well, the public wants my fire department. No, they don't. When their house is on fire, they need someone that you've already trained with, you've already worked with, you can common radio frequencies quickly. And there's still so many communities in this country where because of jurisdictional lines, there may be a fire station minutes closer but will not call for them because of that that ego or that political protectiveness that really needs to get – we need to get past that. And with ISO now looking at full credit and really, you know, there's a benefit for everybody there. And there's as Butch was saying before, there's a firefighter safety aspect to this. The quicker you get a line on the fire, the quicker we're safer operating on a fire ground. I mean, it's pretty basic stuff. So, Mike,
Absolutely.
I do have another – go ahead, Mike.
Sure, go ahead.
I have another question for you, if we're done with your comments related to automatic aid.
Sure.
You all said, okay. How do insurance companies use the information? I mean, we talked about gathering all this stuff, okay, all this information. You come to our community, you evaluate our fire department. It's in there. There's all these records. All right, now I'm Billy G's insurance company on Main Street. How do I use this?
What is very important for the insurers is to know how far away is that well-trained, well-equipped fire department responding with a minimum of delay, with an adequate supply of water to that individual address. And what ISO does to assist the insurance industry in this regard is that we provide this information to virtually all U.S. insurers of home and business property for their utilization and determination for underwriting and rating considerations. Now, as we said from the beginning of the program, ISO information is advisory. It's up to the companies to determine how to utilize that. But consider that virtually all receive that information. The next process that takes place is insurers want to know on an individual address basis, whether it's commercial property or residential, is what are the variables? What is the public protection class at the risk? How far away is a creditable hydrant or water supply? So not only do we provide the information to insurers in a general format on a community basis, but ISO has gone a step further. And we have utilized for a number of years now a state-of-the-art geographic information system-based program that 8 out of the 10 top insurers utilize in their underwriting processes. And that is, we have taken every address in the United States, pre-coded it, and we can identify to the insurers the name of the responding fire department, not the closest one, the responding department. As you point out, there are boundary issues in
many communities. In other words, the department having jurisdiction is who you're talking
about.
That's
right. That's right. And by the way, if there's an automatic aid responder that's closer to that address, we identify that. So we'll say, in your example before, Town A is located in Town A under the jurisdiction of this department, but Town B is actually under automatic aid agreement, and they are the closest responder, so we identify that. We identify whether or not there is a creditable hydrant on the basis of our witnessing flow tests and hydrant information. This is all pre-processed electronically by taking hydranted areas and placing them into this GIS tool. And then the other aspect is, what is the actual protection class at that particular property? And so that information, the fire department, the water supply, automatic aid, the nearest station, and the distances to those responding stations really allow companies to achieve their objective of precise underwriting and rating analyses. So that's another request out there, that where you have made changes in your fire department station location, you've been able to build a new station, or you've merged or consolidated your operation, or you've entered into automatic aid agreements, or you're working with your water utility, as a team, you have added more hydrants in areas of your community. We really need to know that. Please know that ISO is seeking that updated information. We contact you proactively, each fire chief around the country should be receiving a phone call and a package and a direction to a website if they prefer to update electronically so that we know where the changes are. Many communities have us on a mailing list when they annex areas or enter into other boundary change information. We add that into our electronic system so that insurers can be as accurate as possible.
Basically, anytime a fire chief's going to, I mean, if you're making a change that's significant, you've added staffing, you've changed the station, you've increased companies, things like that, as a part of your process, ISO needs to be on that checklist, and a fire chief would do that through Fire Chiefs Online.
Yes, and that's how to get the value of your service that you're providing to your community down into that policy level information that insurers may be relying on. And that is, you go to a lot of time and effort. Everybody works really hard to provide the best fire protection they can. We want to make sure that that information is relayed and transferred to ISO. We in turn then can inform insurers of what you're doing and where.
Very, very good. All right, good. I do have one final question, and then we can do some final comments. Does this stuff matter? I mean, I know it does. You know it does. But what statistical work has been done or proven or shown that there is clearly a link between the PPC program and fire losses in a community? And I'll throw that to both of you. Let me start with Mike, because he's already got his jaw engaged from chatting with me for the last couple minutes. And then, Butch, I'd like you to comment also from your perspective, as well as the experience you had in Jersey City, which sort of got you involved in this whole thing. So, Mike, again, my question, is there a link between the PPC program and fire losses? What is that link, and where has it been shown?
That's a great question, and one in which we think is very important for everyone to know. And that is that this program, while it's been around a long time, it's very important that it is demonstrating its value through that analysis. We have a saying around our company that in God we trust, all others bring data. And that is that it has to be borne out in the information in order for it to make a difference. The numbers have to tell that. So we know that there's a difference just being in the fire service between the levels of protection that we see. What's important is that we've analyzed that relationship by taking many, many years of losses that are reported to ISO, and we're working so closely with the insurance industry. We have a huge database. I guess it's one of the bigger databases in the world, actually,
right,
of loss information. So we compare that losses, commercial lines, for businesses and for residential, by protection class, by fire station location. And we show a direct statistical relationship, and it's a strong one, in that communities that have the higher or worse PPC ratings, the 8s, 9s, and 10s, have fire losses that are actually two or more times as high as communities with the best. So mathematically it shows it. Under loss analysis, it shows it. And recent data, even this is an ongoing process, demonstrates the same point, that PPC does matter. What communities do, the decisions that are made to improve fire protection, reflect themselves in lower losses.
The experience you went through, Butch, and you were sort of, you commented earlier that you didn't believe this stuff until you actually took time to learn about it, and you were kind of forced to in your role as Chief of Operations in Jersey City. So you have seen clearly a link between the PPC program and the losses and the experience that you saw in Jersey City.
Yeah, that was, a real eye-opener for me. I hate to say it, but I was one of those traditional Northeast chiefs that didn't quite believe in ISO and said, oh, what a pain it's going to be. But Once you really, if you just stop for a minute, any fire chief, deputy chief, battalion chief, anybody, if you just stop for a minute and just look at the numbers, it's just a glaring fact that you know, the more you strive to get higher up on that list, 4, 3, 2, you know, to the top classification of one, just a direct correlation to the fire losses. It's just like Mike said, it's really undisputed. I just want to kind of repeat what I said earlier. The two things that really stand out for me, having spent, you know, pretty much of my life in the fire service, you know, dating back to 1969, is that the PPC, when you look at what you do, when we go out there, when the field reps go out there and they look at your fire department, they take that snapshot of your fire department, the two things that stand out for me, and again, I'm repeating myself, but communities with higher quality training and communities with sufficient engine and ladder trucks just have lower, lower fire losses. It just stands right out, and that has to say something. To me, you know, that says it all for the PPC program. Really, if I'm a fire chief, that's all I need to know. I'm going to turn around and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to do everything in my power to get my classification to a higher level.
Well, but you know, Mike, you know, too, is when we started as firefighters, we didn't care about the numbers. Let's go to fires. But as you move up as captains and chiefs and you're dealing with mayors and councils and business people, they want the emotion taken out of it. They say, show me the numbers. And that's what we're talking about here. And you do have the numbers to show.
And you know what? That was one of the things in 2004 when they left Jersey City, you know, never thinking that the paperwork they left behind, the documents, we put them down on a table and put them right next to our budget as we started to plan. You know, where do we need to spend the money? And what helped us was looking at our the PPC report. That kind of showed us, you know what, we need to spend a few more bucks on this. It's going to make us a safer fire department. It's going to make us a better fire department, and it's right here in black and white. They're telling us. You know, and the other thing that I found with these guys, they didn't run out of town when they were done. We still had a little bit of work to do because we had to go over to City Hall and say, hey, look, this is what we found. And we went over to not only armed with a box full of paperwork and numbers and statistics, but with the manager for the area and a senior field rep standing right beside us when we had to go over and talk.
When you talk to the mayor, you talk to the council. That's right. They back you.
Absolutely. It was a free service. I looked at it as, you know what, it was a free consulting service. And they'll tell you right up front, we're going to be here for the long run. I had questions 3 or 4 months after the fact, and it was just a phone call away. I brought one of the field reps back into Jersey City 2 or 3 times over the next 6 or 7 months. Oh, well, we headed in the right direction. Look at what we're doing. What do you think? And he would show up at my door. He'd make an appointment. He'd show up at my door. So, and I see this now. I've gone on other surveys now with the field reps just for my own education. And
sure.
and what I found was they do this in every community. They sit down at the end and they say to the chief, hey, you know what? We'll stay here with you. You need us, we'll come back. We'll do overviews. We'll come back every 3 months, whatever schedule you want. So they just don't come in, hit your town, and run away. They're there for the long haul, and that's really one of the best things I found.
And again, right now, with so many communities going through some tough economic times, you can directly show the community where there'll be money savings, not just in the tax dollars, but also to the local business people and the homeowners and what they can save with a better value, a better rated fire department. So, well,
yeah,
go ahead, Butch. I was going to go to some final.
No, I was
going to
say because we don't set the rates. You know, it's hard to determine. But just recently, when I was down at Fire Health Expo, I did another podcast on engine company operations, and you know, I was talking to. I'm not going to mention the community, but the chief took me aside and he said, you know what? He said, a small community. We went from a 6 to a 3. And he said he went around to every insurer in the area, and this is just from him now. I haven't even verified this, but he said to me, on average, it saved every homeowner in his community. This small community, He said it saved him about $221 a year.
Which is a lot more than most pay for fire protection. So there's a number right there. That's a great value. And you know, you talk about a free service. It really is. It's a free service that comes in and evaluates, provides you with direction, provides you with numbers, and it's a win-win. So, well, I sure appreciate the time we spent today, both Mike and Butch. Any final comments from you, Mike, real quick before we wrap it up?
Well, just to thank you and Firehouse.com for the opportunity. And there is one thought we want to emphasize, and that is both, as you know, Butch and I wear two hats here. We have a vision at ISO that every fire department should know as much as possible about every building you're going to enter before the fire. Every insurer wants to know about information on every building they insure. Our role in ISO is to help both the insurance industry, and we feel very passionately about assisting the fire service in this regard. So our vision is to one day fire departments can access information about every structure, either that they do on their own, which is wonderful, or that they can rely on ISO to assist. And in turn, we rely on the fire department to assist us in providing that information. So it's that added interest that both the fire department and insurers have together, working together to make this work to the benefit of all involved. And that firefighter, we all know, crawling down a hallway at 2 o'clock in the morning, you want to know what you're headed into. So that's our vision, and that's the way we'd like to.
And that's kind of the bottom line. Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Butch, final comment.
Mike kind of said it all. I would just hope that our listeners go to our ISO mitigation .com site, get your fire chief to sign up to Fire Chiefs Online. He can then give the password to five other members of his department. Everything on there, like you said, Billy, the free service. Everything on there about your community. You can download, or we'll ship to you for free. We want you to know what you're facing, and you know, before it happens, like Mike said. And lastly, I know I can speak for Mike and all my guys at ISO, and just to say, our thoughts and prayers really go out to the Buffalo Fire Department and Chief and Commissioner Mike Lombardo. Mike's been a longtime friend, great guy. I've been up there with him, rode with the Buffalo guys. They have an excellent, great fire department. You know, and sometimes, like you said at the beginning, these heroes just they take that extra step, and it costs them their lives. But thoughts and prayers go out to those guys. And I thank you, Billy, for thinking about us to open up your program again. And I want to thank Pete Matthews and all the guys at Firehouse.com for the opportunity.
Absolutely a pleasure to have you guys both. Mike Waters, Vice President of Risk Decision Services, and a fire captain in Jackson, New Jersey, and Butch Cobb, who's now the Director of Community Mitigation, who's retired Chief of Operations, Jersey City Fire Department in New Jersey, and former chief in West Milford Township, New Jersey, as well as Dumont, New Jersey. And thanks to the listeners for tuning in and listening to the show this week, and we'll continue with some more shows. We've gotten some good requests in by email asking for certain types of shows to be hit on, so we'll hit on those shows. Otherwise, you're listening to Through the Smoke at radio@firehouse.com. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. Take care.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.